All right, all you movie junkies, it is time for the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim.
And welcome one and all to episode 64 of the SLS Cast. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are now in tune with our inner selves by having reached the Lord Shiva episode of the SLS Cast. Now, you might ask yourself, what the fuck does the Lord Shiva have to do with anything, the SLS Cast? And I will tell you that the Lord Shiva has no less than 64 forms or manifestations. With that existential knowledge, namaste, I am Matt.
And I am Tim.
All right, well, that's good to know. How are things in the world of Tim?
Things in the world of Tim are going great. I mean, the weather has been nice yet again here in the sunny Los Angeles. Last week, we went and saw an advanced movie screening of the Aaron Paul movie, Need for Speed, which was quite the... It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
Well, I gotta say that I'm more or less done with video game adaptations. Although I do think that Game Informer said it best when they said Hollywood doing car chases and explosions. Psh, please. I thought that was pretty funny. Anyway,
I mean, the movie was interesting. Personally, I think it's a solid 2.5 out of 5. You know, that's as solid as really you can get with this kind of movies, where the car chases consists of cars just passing things.
Don't forget tack and shifting, Tim.
You always got to tack and shift
with an angry look on your face that would make James Garner pissed off, because I think everybody's just trying to steal the way that he drove in the Rockford Files.
Yeah, and it's kind of amazing how people are going, you know, nearly like 150 plus miles per hour. And these people are, I mean, there's a car chase through redwoods, through the, you know, just like random towns and shit. And they have enough time to like look out the window and snarl at each other without running into anything, which just kind of, it's just kind of flabbergasting. It's one of those movies. And it's another one of those movies where Michael Keaton is just kind of thrown into a character. It's just kind of a knockoff on Cleavon Little, you know, the announcer guy announcing from Vanishing Point, from a small town, and he's kind of like the guide for the main character. He's just the overseer, and he's the one that explains shit to the audience so they don't forget what the hell's going on. But it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy stuff. Go and see. I bet this is what they were expecting after showing me an advanced screening of their movie.
Outstanding. I might just see that for free at somebody's house in a few years.
Via Redbox.
Well, in the ever-continuing saga of Matt and Tim trying to freak each other the fuck out over the internet by showing them random things that the other has no prior knowledge of, Tim has a surprising treat for me. And I am told all I know is that it's a trailer, and I am to watch it now.
That is correct.
Lay it on me, sir. I'm pulling up the tab.
Emailed you the link.
Oh, hang on. We're going to the email, folks.
That's
going
right.
To email.
So you should just be able to click on the link. Try not to look at the title of the trailer.
What? You telling me that... I mean, come on. Watch V=7 on at Frank_HKE?
I totally know what that is. I don't know if maybe you're into the Matrix shit and you just stare at those you know, numbers all the time.
That's right. Brunette, blonde, that's right.
No, the YouTube page.
Okay, well, just let me know, and I will double-click this link and just start watching.
No, go for it.
All right, here we go. Okay. Here we go. Maybe.
It's going to be a car commercial before you watch a trailer for Zombievers.
No, I have my shit taken care of. I don't have to worry about that.
Make it rain, bitches! What is that?
Make it rain, bitches.
Look.
You girls from out of town?
We're staying over there in my cousin's place. We were looking for beavers.
Well, hell, ain't we all?
Looking for the beavers.
I had enough excitement for one day. What was that?
Cabin Fever, The Ring, Where the Millers, and American Pie.
Someone in there? There's a beaver in the bathroom! Kill it! Yuck. Can we please go swimming now?
This is definitely meant to...
Ever occurred to any of you that there might be more beavers?
Please tell me this is meant to be like Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
I'm sure it's not
never
serious.
Seen a real beaver
considering
before.
It's from the makers of maybe you should try those three yeah. You know, drastically different movies.
Cannot turn against each other right now. That is exactly what the beavers would
want.
Wow. Beavers are generally more active at night. Their road's locked, but sure as hell can't get through on foot.
Suck a bag of dick!
There's no way I'm drunk enough for this.
They look like miniature R.O.U.S.'s from Princess Bride. Okay, so in case you haven't figured it out, folks, because I didn't accurately state this up front, I have been watching the trailer to Zombievers. And let me tell you, folks, I think we may have found something that could be just as good, if not better, than Nymphomaniac. I'm not sure yet, because I haven't seen them in total. But this could be just as groundbreaking as Trawlers and Tuna and all that kind of shit.
Two beavers and two drastically different movies. Nymphomaniac and Zombievers. Is Shia LaBeouf in this one? I couldn't catch his name in the credits.
No, I don't think so. I didn't see any paper bags. People wearing paper bags, so I might not have. Yeah. All right. Well, that's pretty interesting. I was expecting something like kind of creepy and gross or stupid or crazy, you know, like just completely outlandish, a la Blue Waffle or Vibrator stuff from Brookstone. But I gotta say, I'm almost a little bit disappointed that it wasn't something completely outlandish.
You got to watch a beaver, you know, get some beavers for a minute and a half.
This is true. Yes. Zombievers for Zombievers. A minute and a half. Okay. Well, then I guess there's nothing left for us to do but get right to the news. What do you think?
That sounds about right.
Then by God, let's do it, folks. The news!
Sorry, Matt, that's violation of Cries of Solace copyright laws.
I am the copyright law for Cries of Solace. Are you kidding me? Oh my goodness. I have direct permission in writing from the originator of the song.
I won't believe until you get it tattooed across your chesticle. Or chesticles. Ooh. I guess there. I mean, hopefully you have two boobs and not just a uniboob.
I don't know. I mean, it would
be weird to have one there to like.
It might
spank
negate my
with.
Ability to get a job later on if I have such a crazy ass tattoo.
Well, I mean,
like the people who have a
what kind of job?
3-inch tattoo of a skull on their forehead and then wonder why they can only get a minimum wage job.
If you have a tattoo on your boob, how would it keep you from getting that particular job? You're gonna be like
I don't
a,
know. I mean, I have seen a lot of movies, and typically when a chick tries to get a job, there's nudity. No? Did movies not teach me the right thing again? Damn it, movies!
Well, maybe Harold Ramis movies taught you that.
Oh, too soon. Anyway, all right, so I'm going to jump in here. This is coming to us from CNN.com, courtesy of Todd Leopold. Harold Ramis of Ghostbusters and Groundhog Day fame dies. Very sad, very sad. I didn't realize that he was sick, but he has been struggling. It says here that Harold Ramis, the actor, writer, and director whose films include Stripes, Ghostbusters, Groundhog Day, and Analyze This, has died. He was 69. His death was caused by complications related to autoimmune inflammatory vasculitis, a condition Ramis battled for 4 years, according to United Talent Agency, which represents Ramis for which represented Ramis for many years as well. Ramis died Monday morning in his Chicago area home. In case you haven't figured this out yet, today is the 25th of February, so it's Tuesday for us. He loved Chicago and lived there for as much as he could. I mean, basically, even his adult life, he lived there. He was a veteran of the 2nd City Troop, and he was a writer for SCTV before he went on to co-write scripts for National Lampoon's Animal House, Caddyshack, which he directed, Stripes, Ghostbusters. I mean, just awesome stuff that he did. And anybody who knows him, and it was really cool, they on Reddit, I apologize, I'm kind of going all over the place. Stephen Tobolowsky did a Ask Me Anything on Reddit yesterday, of all days, to promote his Kickstarter for a new movie that he's trying to put together. And, of course, it just happened to coincide when he started. It was within an hour of the announcement of Harold Ramis passing. And so he has some just amazingly cool stories about how wonderful Harold Ramis was as a writer and as a director. And you see that here. I mean, they even quote here in the article, they quote Steve Carell as having tweeted, quote, "Harold Ramis, funny, gracious, kind-hearted, a joy to have known you," end quote. Everybody says this. Bill Murray also has mentioned it in the last 24 hours. It's just everybody who seems to know this guy. This was not one of those, everybody's being nice to the dead. They're just trying not to speak ill of the dead. Everybody seems to have genuinely cared about this guy, and he just was such a joy and a pleasure to work with. And it's just very, very sad. I mean, we seem to be losing quite a bit of talent lately, and I kind of want it to stop. I'm tired of losing people that I like. So check it out. CNN.com has, I think, the most succinct article and definitely full of praise.
Yeah, and I know they're also going to have to go back and rework a couple scenes of the Ghostbusters 3 script as well, because apparently there was a cameo by him, and apparently Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and all those guys, so they're going to have to rework it a little bit.
I don't know. I think this will probably be the nail in the coffin that shuts down Ghostbusters 3 forever.
Yeah. To me, it just wouldn't feel the same or wouldn't be the same if everybody wasn't involved with it or didn't approve of
it. Yeah, I really think, and I'm not trying to say that Ramis's death here is a cop-out by any stretch of the imagination. I know that Aykroyd has just been trying for the last 15 years to get this movie on board, and he has just hit wall after wall after wall after wall after wall, and that the spiritual successor to Ghostbusters 2 was the Ghostbusters video game from back in 2007, 2008,
mm-hmm.
because they actually got just about every single person to come back to do the voiceover for the video game, because nobody had to worry about makeup and acting in real life and all that stuff. I think it's time to just let it go and just let it be a really happy memory in our minds, and something that we can always, with a little bit of a bittersweet smile, wonder pleasantly, what if? Because this way, everybody gets to keep their vision of what Ghostbusters 3 would have, could have, should have been in their minds, and no one has to have their dream ruined. Well, except for poor Dan Aykroyd. But he's going through enough already. He just lost his good friend.
Right. All right, so the distributors, producers, production company that were behind one of the biggest movies ever made, 1997's Titanic, James Cameron's 1997's Titanic, I'm sure if he could have it, that's what it would be entitled. It turns out they're being sued by an extra. That's right. This guy who, well, he's claiming that he was promised $60 a day to do background work on Titanic. And apparently, like, according to him, the spur of the moment, James Cameron said, "Hey, I want you to be in a scene." And apparently he is featured in the movie opposite Kathy Bates, who plays the unsinkable Molly Brown, during her first scene in the movie. And he is shown, his name is Jay. Jay is shown carrying her luggage and reciting some dialogue, and this is all according to the suit that he filed. Again, the suit is named against 20th Century Fox, Paramount Pictures, James Cameron's Lightstorm Entertainment, Earthship Productions, Walden Media, and Walt Disney Pictures. I mean, these were all the different companies that had a hand in producing, distributing, just making this movie happen. And apparently, according to this Hollywood Reporter article, they say that, quote, "He is suing for fraud by concealment, right to publicity, and common law appropriation of likeness, among other things. He seeks unspecified damages at a trial by jury. The defendants named in the suit did not immediately respond to requests for commitment, end quote. I don't know, something tells me it's not going to be as successful as this VJ guy might expect.
This sounds like a dumb lawsuit.
Yeah, and James Cameron, man, he's been getting shafted with all these lawsuits. Not too long ago, he was a guy was saying that James Cameron plagiarized Avatar based on a script or something this one guy wrote.
He completely ripped off Disney's Pocahontas.
Yeah, if he was going to get sued for anything, it should be by Disney, by one of these companies.
Or was it Dances with Wolves meets Ferngully? I can't remember. Yeah. But, I mean, either way. I mean, you know, it's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's that. That
I
is
think
more...
he's just getting sued by the wrong person.
Exactly, yeah. That makes more sense than him getting sued by an extra. And, of course, this is it's been, what, like a little less than, well, like 15 years or so? A little more than 15 years? It's just crazy. I mean, it's kind of. Yeah, I bet the guy just recently has gone into debt. The guy's probably just gotten sued, gotten divorced, or is recently in debt. So he just needs some extra cash. And, you know, I guess this seemed like the smart move.
You got me. I don't know. I guess real quick, though, for me, next up, I've got a rather really cool filmjunk.com article. This was posted by Sean of filmjunk.com, and the source, of course, is Rope of Silicon. Now, I'm not going to go through this. I really just want you guys to try and check it out. Now, this is from 2012. The article is slightly dated. However, if you're really interested in this article, what this is about is people like Woody Allen, Francis Ford Coppola, Quentin Tarantino, Martin Scorsese, and even also really good foreign directors like Bong Joon-ho, Richard Ayoade, who made Submarine, tons and tons of really neat directors who have put up their top 10 movies of all time. And it is really, really interesting to see just exactly how many people have a Martin Scorsese film in their top 10 of all time. And, of course, you see a lot of people who throw Citizen Kane around. Woody Allen among them. But I just think it's really, really interesting how there are so many people who are amazing directors in their own right, and they keep putting Scorsese films on their list. So I would definitely check it out. Again, I mean, these are, you know, Steve McQueen, Michael Mann, Jeff Nichols, David O. Russell. I mean, there are tons of Edgar Wright, Quentin Tarantino, Martin Scorsese. So check out this list. Again, it's filmjunk.com. You can check that out there.
You know, Anchorman 2 is not finished at all. For 1 week, only 1 week, up until, I guess, the Anchorman 2 gets released on Blu-ray and DVD and all that stuff, they are coming out with a R-rated version of the movie, which will feature 763 new jokes, and this will debut February 28th. According to the director, Adam McKay, quote, "When my editor told me we had a whole different version of the movie that was more than 2 hours long with nearly 800 new jokes, I was shocked. But when Paramount said that they were actually going to put it in theaters, I did a 1950 split take. If you're a hardcore Anchorman fan, go and see this. If you're not, stay very far away," end quote. So the original movie that Matt and I reviewed was about an hour and 59 minutes. This one, apparently, I don't know the exact length, but it's going to be, quote, well over 2 hours. So, and he...
Interesting.
Yeah, he has a little side blurb where he says that it's not going to be just... It's going to include screw-ups and mess-ups. So, reading that and hearing what other people have to say about it is that it's... There's going to be, like, actual outtakes, as in it's not going to really fall within the line of the movie. Like, there might be some director-actor interaction, because he's using stuff that ended up getting captured by the camera that came before the actual scene began, and then whenever they called cut, you know, sometimes some little gems of comedy popped out of somewhere. So, it's going to be... I think it would be interesting. After being quite underwhelmed with Anchorman 2, I'm willing to give this one a shot. I don't know if I'd pay to go see it at the movie theater, but definitely consider renting it.
I'm surprised, too, because I remember we had talked about this as a news item back in December about how there were going to be two versions of Anchorman 2. And were they actually going to try and release them even not necessarily simultaneously, but one after the other, or how they're, and it, there you go. There's your answer. They are going to actually do this. Ooh, crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see here. Next up for me, I'm going to, I've got a article from BGR.com, courtesy of Brad Reed. It's explaining to us why Netflix's streaming quality has nosedived over the past few months. And it starts off with a pretty good question, which is answered in the affirmative by me. Have your Netflix streams been much more laggy or choppy in recent months? If so, then you're not alone. As Wall Street Journal shows, Netflix streaming quality has tanked at multiple major ISPs since this past October, and much of it stems from behind-the-scenes wrangling over who will pick up the tab for all the added traffic demands that Netflix services are generating. Now, I like that these articles are coming out on the heels of net neutrality being shuttered, and yet I didn't notice this in October, November, or December. I noticed it in January, after they shut down net neutrality. Now, when I'm streaming from my computer, it's fine. And when I'm streaming on my phone, it's fine. But if I'm using my any of my third-party devices, Wii U, 360, Boxybox, what have you, the streaming quality is way degraded. Netflix has their own piping system that it uses to bridge to the major servers that Comcast, Time Warner, and their ilk use. So think of Netflix and the ISPs are running on two parallel streets. Well, they're using a side street to connect those servers. And those servers are basically paid for by Netflix. And so what they want to do is have the ISPs create a new side street that the ISPs pay for, and then that's what Netflix will pipe through. But it's also been construed that Netflix wants to put their, like, look, you guys pay for the broadband speed, you guys pay for the thing, we'll pay for the actual infrastructure. In other words, we'll pay for the servers and we'll pay to run them. Now, there's two different stories going on here, and that's what this article is getting at. You have the that is it the ISPs that are not letting Netflix do this because they think Netflix is trying to take advantage of them? Or is Netflix actually saying, no, we can work together on this? The biggest problem is you have ISPs like Time Warner who have been very, very public about dragging their feet on aggressively upgrading the quality of their networks because... And this is from the article. They've repeatedly said that most of their customers don't, quote, need super fast internet connections. This is just completely stupid. This is what happens when a business model just completely goes out of its way to trip over itself. I just think that Netflix, personally, I think Netflix needs to take that money, like I said, either last week or the week before. Netflix needs to take some of those billions of dollars they were going to use on licensing, just become their own ISP. I guarantee you, between them and Google, you will never hear about Comcast or Time Warner again. Especially now that they're merging. Oh my god. Which might give competitors, say, like Amazon, a leg up. I don't know. But anyway, what else you got for us, sir?
Well, that you kind of led on into this one, I'll just go on to,
right.
Take
this article. Take my segue, bitch.
Yeah.
Take it.
Yeah.
Take
so,
it all.
Another Hollywood Reporter article. Amazon steps up Netflix rivalry in UK and Germany. And they say that the e-tail giant drops its love film instant brand and switches to its US model, combining its Amazon Prime and online streaming services. And I'm just going to read the first couple little blurbs here over this. And this is an article written in London, and it says that Amazon is dropping its Love Film Instant Online brand in the UK and Germany, renaming it Amazon Instant Video after opting to combine its subscription postal DVD rental business, Amazon Prime, and the streaming service. When the two combine, Prime will be offered in the UK at $130. The company is also offering a launch offer of $81 to attract new customers to sign up. And apparently that members will have unlimited access to exclusive film titles such as The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, The Hangover Part 2, One Direction, This Is Us, Friends with Benefits, and Alvin and the Chipmunks, Chipwrecked. I don't know, Matt. I think with those titles right there, I might want to make the switch to Amazon Instant because I really need that full access to Chipmunks, Chipwrecked.
Hey, my kids go apeshit over that. I mean, that's it doesn't matter for me because I have both. I definitely would say that currently my Netflix percent, like out of the percentage of total viewing of digital content on subscription sites that I own, or that I subscribe to, rather, they are Netflix and Amazon Instant, because I'm a Prime member. So I would say it's probably 99.3% Netflix and then 0.7% Amazon.
Yeah, and apparently that Amazon had acquired more than 20 million Prime subscribers worldwide by the end of 2013. The vast majority was in the U.S. 20 million.
Well, the thing is, though, is that I am not a Prime member because of the instant viewing. I am a Prime member because of the free shipping. Now, it is also a side benefit that, yes, I get the streaming, and yes, I get a free Kindle ebook if I had a Kindle. I suppose I could use it on my Kindle app or something. But, you get a free digital rental once a month or whatever. So there are side benefits to having that, but it's really just kind of a feature for me. I just like to have the free shipping. That's my bag, baby.
Yeah, and just one very last little quote here. Apparently, Amazon will also begin to provide download-to-own and video-on-demand rental films, such as iTunes and Blinkbox and all that stuff. So,
sweet.
Interesting stuff.
All right, so from USAtoday.com, courtesy of Brian Truitt, Disney debuts Digital Movies Anywhere service. That's right, folks. Fans can watch owned movies through cloud-based app or shop for new titles such as Frozen, out today. For those who want to watch Disney movies anywhere, now there's an app with all the right, For those who want to watch Disney movies anywhere, now there's an app with all that right there in the name. Launching today, Walt Disney Studios' cloud-based Disney Movies Anywhere digital movie service allows young and old to watch all their favorite Disney and Pixar and Marvel Studio movies on an internet browser, Apple TV, or a free app through their iPad, iPhone, or iPod Touch. And let me tell you guys, this is like a 400-plus movie library. So it's all the stuff. I actually went and checked it out, signed up. If you link your iTunes account to your movie account, which also works with Disney Movie Rewards for anybody who's into that, you automatically get a free copy of The Incredibles. Now, if you already go and buy things like the Blu-ray and digital copy and all that kind of stuff, you just key in your Disney Movie Rewards code into the website, and then bam, you've got your digital copy online. So you do not have to go through and just buy movies twice if you're already buying things with digital copy. It's a really easy service. It's real simple to use. As you key in your stuff that expands to your collection, it also adds to your Disney Movie Rewards and stuff. So I actually, and then you also, depending on what movies you're uploading or adding on, they're always running promotions and stuff. So I actually got another free movie today and I got points and stuff. So this is a very simple service. I really liked it. It was really kind of cool. And thanks to this article, I found out myself. I told my mother-in-law and she is just completely over the moon with Disney movies, and they're also a complete Apple household, so they've got that going for them, which is nice. So if you're down with that, then there you go. And if nothing else, you can just go and cross-reference it with your iTunes, and then you automatically get a free copy of The Incredibles. So, yay! And that's going to be my news, sir.
Well, I have some more sad news. I think it's going to be the end. After 25 years of service, I think it's safe to announce the death of the Mr. Movie Phone guy.
Oh no! Don't take away Movie Phone!
Yes, that's right. Originally, I mean, I cannot tell you how many times I have dialed 777-FILM. Because I was stuck in a bind trying to figure out what movie was going to play at what movie theater. And there in the Woodlands, close to where I used to live. and over by where Matt is, there are two movie theaters close by. One of them played some of like the independent films, and the other one played more of the big budget, wide release movies. But sometimes there would be some crossover, and if I'd go to one and then I realize, oh crap, this one already started or it's filled up, and I wanted to figure out if I can make the next one in time or not, I've had to call that number, because always if you try to call the movie theater to ask for movie times, you usually got a lot of bitchy responses, because normally at 6, 7 o'clock p.m. on a Friday or Saturday night, they're swamped with customers. So yes, I mean, Mr. Movie Phone has helped me out of a couple buy-ins over the years. But I guess due to technology and how everybody gets all their information, I mean, it's much more quicker and easier Googling it on your phone now, you know, or just asking somebody to Google it for you. Or now what they're doing is, instead of the Mr. Movie Phone guy's voice, it has somebody coming on telling you to reference their app. So Movie Phone isn't completely going away. It's just going all digital. And you know,
is there any irony lost on anyone there that you're going to moviephone.com? Maybe because you're doing it from your phone? Hey, I don't know. I just, yeah.
Oh, yes. And that just kind of reminds me of the Seinfeld episode.
And this has been Movie Phone, brought to you by 20th Century Technology.
And I just have one more little bitty piece of news that I have to... Yeah, I just can't save till next week, so I don't think it's going to be really relevant anymore. So the movie Top Gun. This one guy on Twitter is such a Top Gun fanatic. I understand there are Top Gun fanatics out there, but the movie just doesn't really speak to me as much as, I guess, these people, you know, it does for them. But this one guy took to Twitter, and his Twitter account name was 555UHZ, original, I guess. I mean, you'd figure it'd be Maverick123 or something like that. But he took to Twitter, where he posted frame-by-frame pictures of the movie Top Gun in its entirety. And I highly doubt he's completed that task now. I don't know if it was for like an art, personal art project or whatever. But it looks like he's never going to finish it. Not because it's going to take him years and years and years to do this, but it's because Paramount Pictures asked Twitter to shut down at 555UHZ's account. And they say that no one is authorized to copy, reproduce, distribute, or otherwise use Top Gun without the express written permission of Paramount Pictures. Again, this is another one of those things where it's like, I mean, it's pictures. I mean, they should commend the guy for being such a fan of going through and actually posting frame-by-frame pictures of their movie. I mean, that shows dedication. In commitment. They should give him a special luncheon with Tom Cruise, or I'd rather have Val Kilmer, but it's crazy stuff. What's next? They're going to sue us for criticizing their movies.
No. They'll just shut down our Twitter account.
good thing we don't use it.
Hey! Alrighty. Okay.
Well, that was fun. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. So shall we go ahead? Okay, so we're kind of changing up the format of the show, because our discussion is going to be about our movie picks or our Oscar picks. So we should probably talk about the last remaining Oscar-nominated movies. And I think we're going to go ahead and do that now. So instead of masterpiece discussion being first, then movies, we're going to go ahead and do movies and then masterpiece discussion. And on that note, here we go, folks. The movies. That's the only riff that I can remember off the top of my head.
Now, whenever I'm editing, I'm personally gonna put in the wrong music. So whenever it fades out of the opening music, it's going to be you just singing totally different music. It's going to be great. There's going to be all violins and trumpet noises. And then there's Matt in the background doing Cries of Solace.
That's right. That's the idea. Okay, so we are finally wrapping up the long Oscar season here with Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom, All is Lost, The Book Thief, and Before Midnight. Where do you want to begin, good sir?
Let's go with Before Midnight.
Okay. Before Midnight. This, of course, is the 2013 American romantic drama film, and the sequel to Before Sunrise from 1995 and Before Sunset from 2004. Like its predecessors, the film, of course, directed by Richard Linklater and stars Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. Okay, I did not see the first two movies. Tim did, so I guess maybe he is in a better position to rate this movie first. Perhaps I will get something more out of it after listening to the opining of Tim.
Before I decided to watch Before Midnight, I took it upon myself to find time to watch the first two movies. And it's totally worth it, because I think what's important to know about these movies is that you're watching the first movie, which takes place in 94-95. The second movie takes place 9 years after that. And the next movie takes place 9 years after that. The first movie is about them meeting and falling in love, and what attracts the two of them to each other. What connects them together? And the entire movie takes place early evening all the way till sunrise the next morning, when Ethan Hawke's character has to catch a plane back to the United States. And Julie Delpy, she plays, well, in the first movie, neither of them are named. And she's French, and so, of course, she can't go back to America. She has her own life in Paris and all that stuff. But so I don't want to give away any details of the first one. Well, in the second one, it's obvious. And somehow, 9 years later, they reconnect. And it shows them reconnecting. It's really hard to talk about this one, especially without ruining kind of the juicy bits and what really pull these characters together. But you realize what draws them back to each other, how they become connected, and how they stay connected. Like, what is the tipping point for them to decide, you know what, I'm going to stay in Paris, I'm going to fall in love with you, and you know what, I want to marry you. And what's great is that, you know, there's no wedding at the end of it. The second one takes place before sunset. So it's afternoon, late afternoon, early evening, all the way to basically sunset. And then you have the third movie, Before Midnight. They're together. They're not married. They're together. They have this relationship, and they have two kids. I mean, they're living in Paris. But the movie opens up with this son from the United States comes to visit him. He has an ex-wife out there. And at the opening of the movie, he's sending his son off to go back home, to go back to the United States. Right off the bat, you realize that he's torn. He's torn between his life in Paris that he has with his life partner, played by Julie Delpy, and his two daughters. But he's also torn from his life with his son, which he realizes that he can help improve, because he knows that his wife is, according to him, a crazy bitch who she's using him to ruin his life or to break his life down. And he just kind of feels torn apart. He feels like he should be there. And you know that he loves his wife. He loves his daughters. But he's just trying to come up with some reason in some way to fulfill what he thinks is lacking in the father department to his son that he had with his ex-wife. But at the same time, his life partner, Julie Delpy again, she's worried that he's going to make her, you know, give up everything and move to Chicago to be with the son. And this is kind of what the movie, in a way, is about for the most part. This is, again, where the juicy bits come from. They have these long, drawn-out scenes where, in all three of the movies, they at least have one part of the movie for like a 15 to 20-minute scene when the two of them are walking somewhere. In the first movie, they're walking down an alleyway. The second movie, they're walking down an alleyway, but it's a different camera direction. It's one continuous shot. But my God, you can never tell. I mean, it's amazing because, at least with me, the movie is written so well and these characters are portrayed so well that I get lost in their dialogue. I get lost in their movie. And I think a part of it is that it's not just Richard Linklater, the director who is writing the movie, but it's Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke, who are screenwriters as well. The three of them are the ones that collaborate and create these characters, create the story, and they definitely created this life for their characters. And God, I mean, if you didn't know any better, you'd think that Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy are married and they're together. Because it's just the little things, you know, and it's in the third movie, it's in Before Midnight, where you notice the little things that happen between couples, between married folk. Just anybody that's been together for a specific period of time, for there to be some kind of history, for there to be some kind of tug-of-war, you know, aspect to the relationship. That I know so many people out there have seen or have taken part in these same exact arguments that this couple have. If it's not content, then it's how it builds up and how they could be yelling and screaming at each other, and then it's like, okay, we'll take it down a notch, let's talk about it. And then, man, there's another trigger word, and then the arguments build up again, and it can get really mean, it can be really nasty, you can tell your partner to shut the fuck up, or you're a crazy son of a bitch, and then they'll say it just, you know, right back, and then you'll take offense to it, and it just doesn't make any sense, and it's weird, because I was watching this with my girlfriend, and there were parts of it where I was definitely siding with Ethan Hawke, where it's like, well, you know, he took certain criticisms, and he said certain things, he took a little bit, you know, it a little too far with the dialogue, you know, with the vulgarity, I guess, and what he was saying to her. But he made some good points. And then she said, well, you know what, Tim? I can connect with Julie Delpy's character. You know, I understand what she's saying. I understand what she's going through. And I think that's the point of the movie, is that the movie doesn't end perfectly. The movie doesn't end all packaged nice with a nice little bow. But the movie ends exactly how you expect a relationship, not necessarily to end, but how you expect a huge fight like this to end. If you love the person and you understand deep down inside that you belong with this person and that you're willing to sacrifice certain things to be with this person because you love the life that you two create, then you will find a way to work it out or to put up with certain things. And there's a great line where he says to her that, you know, you are a crazy son of a bitch, but I love you. I accept who you are. I know you are not going to change, and I don't want you to change. But I love you. And now you go out and find somebody else who will do the same. You know, and it's kind of funny because I'm sure she can go out and find somebody else, but she knows that deep down inside, you know, they do love each other. And I'm just kind of rambling on and on and on. If you haven't noticed already, I love these movies. I think this movie exposes the true nature of relationships more so than Broken Circle Breakdown, as well as Blue Valentine. I think this movie to me is not melodramatic in any way. It doesn't try too hard. The movie feels like real conversation. It's kind of like when we were talking about Blue Jasmine, I was saying that Blue Jasmine, the dialogue to me, sounded like it was trying so hard to be a Woody Allen movie, just spitfire conversation. It just felt like it was a play. They were reading dialogue from a script. You know, this one, I actually felt like these were real people, like these were characters, and I absolutely enjoyed the movie. Just absolutely delightful. I think that's how I explained all three movies to Matt via text. Just absolutely delightful. Of course, this one is more dramatic, pretty much, yeah, sadder than the other two. But I highly recommend all of them, especially this one. 5 out of 5 for me.
Okay. Not having any attachment to this movie other than just having watched this movie, which can be viewed as a standalone movie, you just simply will not get anywhere near as much out of it. This is very simply done. It's well acted. It's a very nice story. There's good writing involved. Richard Linklater does perfect job of telling this story and having characters who have hung on for 18 years, apparently, because it's the same characters for all three movies. And it's done. I'm going to give this 3 stars. I'm not going to add anything to Tim's. You've got the gist of the whole story there. I just think that this is something that you do need to, I guess, be a little bit more invested into it. On its own, it's a likable enough movie, but nothing super duper special. Perhaps maybe if you are also invested into the story and the characters having watched the previous movies, then you will find more to enjoy than I. 3 stars.
Well, no argument there. Will you at least watch the first two at some point?
No.
No?
Because I already know how everything's going to turn out.
So, but that's not the point.
I'm sorry. I have to completely, patently disagree with your entire review based on that standpoint. This movie is not as good without understanding the motivations of the characters by having experienced all of the, having experienced the entire journey with them. You did that. And that's fine. I'm not taking anything away from your experience. And I don't want you to confuse the fact that I'm trying to attack your position based on the fact that
that you are incorrect in your assumptions. No, I can't make that judgment because I haven't seen those two movies. Perhaps if I had, then I would feel completely different about this movie.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Why I give it 3 stars. I still like it.
That's what I'm saying. Would you watch the first two movies?
Had I not seen this one and watched them, then yes, absolutely. But having watched this one, I have no desire to go back and see how it all started.
Okay, well, despite what Matt was saying, or how he commented on that, honestly, guys, this is a movie where it's about the journey. Yes, I knew going into it that the third movie, watching the whole series, that the third movie was dealing with, I heard something about divorce and children issues. So I knew that it was going to build up. I already knew going into it there were 3 movies. I knew already going into it that they were going to end up together in the third movie. That still did not ruin how, like, you don't know how they, what happens in the second movie. You don't know how the first movie ends and how it transitions into the second movie or the second
Absolutely.
Movie to the third
no,
movie.
I
it's totally
that. I'm
worth
not,
watching.
Again, not again. Disputing any of those things. Not I really think you're misunderstanding my position on this. It's not that I disagree with the fact that if you experience the whole journey, that the third movie is different. It most certainly would be, because you are definitely heavily invested in what has transpired, thus, you know, wanting to see how it turns out and making you care more about the end result of this movie. Absolutely. But this movie can stand on its own.
I would just say the first two movies are just really good movies just to watch.
Sure.
You know, I'm not trying to say watch it for the sake of
that,
the third
movie. And of course, here we are at the end of this review, that perhaps maybe people don't listen to this review until after they've seen all 3 movies, which maybe we should have said it first. I don't know. But, I think that it just simply boils down to that I don't think that it's worth the time investment to go back for the other two movies. You know, it's kind of like watching the end of The Lord of the Rings. If you just go in and see the Return of the King, you'll be caught up enough within the first 20 minutes to figure out where everybody's at, what their motivations are, and then how it's going to turn out. And then you see this big, grand, sweeping, epic conclusion to a story, and you may or may not want to go back and watch the other two because you already know just exactly how arduous it was and how involved it will need to be for you to see what you already know. Now, whether or not you're someone who likes to do that and go, oh, so that's what, and look at it in terms of you kind of knowing an inside joke or something, or someone who likes to know all the behind the scenes stuff, for example, then you might be more inclined to go back. I simply just am not in regards to this movie. But again, likable movie. You know, likable movie. 3 stars. That's all.
Your outlook is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, where do you want to go from there, sir?
Let's do All is Lost.
Okay. All is Lost. Now, this is a Robert Redford movie that he does all by himself. And think along the lines of Castaway with Tom Hanks. To give you an idea, it's not recreating that by any stretch of the imagination, but I mean, just to kind of give you a basis of comparison, it is definitely carried by Robert Redford. It's a 2013 American survival film. It was directed by J.C. Chandor, and it's basically the story of a guy who is lost at sea. And it's just, poor guy, he just, one thing after another. It's just not his fucking day. I mean, and it starts off by he's clipped a shipping container, and then his bilge pump doesn't work, and then his radio's not working, and then he's in his, and all these things, and then there's storms, and fires, and lightning, and lions, and tigers, and bears. How the fuck did they end up in the ocean? Oh my! Not really. But you get the idea. I mean, just anything, literally, Murphy of Murphy's Law took over the position of God and just said, this is what I meant right here. For me, It didn't look very good when I watched the previews of it. I wasn't really expecting a whole lot out of it. And I was totally not surprised. I was completely nonplussed with this movie. We're just going to go with not my bag, folks. It's not too long. It's only 106 minutes. So, I mean, it's just barely not an hour and a half when you factor in credits and all that good stuff. But I don't know. I'm just... Everybody does a good job, just not for me. I didn't like it. I'm sorry.
Everybody as in Robert Redford and his yacht.
Well, I mean, no, I mean the. Don't get me wrong. You see things like with the cinematography.
Yeah,
as well,
yeah,
done.
Yeah.
The direction is good. You know, clearly Robert Redford knows how to act. There's not a whole lot of scripting in terms of dialogue and stuff. But it's, you know, and it does convey the loneliness of the sea and everything like that. Just, it's just not, it just was not for me. So take this as you will, with a grain of salt. Technically, all is fine with this film. Just really wasn't my bag, didn't look all that interesting. And so my expectations were low going in, and it just met my expectations. It did not surpass them, and it did not make me go, oh, either. So I'm just going to go with 2 stars. I just simply didn't like it.
I thought this one was pretty entertaining. I gave it 4 stars. A big chunk of that 4 stars is because I thought this was smarter than Castaway and smarter than any other survival on sea type of movie, only because this was supposed to be a smart man, you know, a guy who is knowledgeable of the sea and what to do whenever you are lost at sea. And it shows him doing these various survival techniques, I mean, and doing them right. And the reason why, you know, the movie is called All Is Lost is because I think by the end of the movie, you're supposed to have the feeling that all is lost for him. And I didn't quite. I mean, I always had that feeling of hope towards the end of the movie. So when the end of the movie does happen, it's just kind of like, yeah, okay, I mean, I figured he deserved it type of thing. And that's where the 1 star just really took it away. But I mean, again, like what Matt was saying, cinematography, the technical aspect of it was beautiful. I just really liked kind of the smartness, the smart direction they went with the character, and kind of interesting. I jotted down a few notes while watching it. So yeah, I gave this one 4 stars.
Right on. And where would you like to move along from here then, sir?
How about The Book Thief?
How about The Book Thief?
This was the happiest story about the Holocaust I think I've ever seen put to screen. the most joyous. Not a whole lot of death. It was very pretty to look at. Jeffrey Rush was the only convincing person out of the entire movie.
I gotta say, this was... this was almost... farce is not... No, farce is definitely not the right word. This movie was almost a little too whimsical for me. Given the subject matter, I just don't know. That the whole idea, the existentialness of the whole... You know, with the Angel of Death as a narrator. And, you know, the story is definitely very interesting.
Which Angel of Death had the voice that will put you to sleep. Like, it's so soothing and, you know.
Which I think belies the brilliance of the voice acting involved with that. That was probably my favorite part, really, was which coincidentally bookends the entire movie, really. But, yeah, I don't know. I thought that this was a very interesting story. I really love the music, but that's to be expected. It's John Williams. I don't know. I just really felt like... I don't know if it was necessarily the screenplay, because this is based on a book. So, and the book, of course, by the same name, The Book Thief by Marcus Zusak, and the screenplay is done by Michael Petroni. It's directed by Brian Percival. This movie to me felt, and again, I don't know. The characterizations are good. I don't necessarily want to say it's the acting. I don't really know what kind of story that the director was really trying to tell with the way he had these characters coming together. I don't, and that's why I say it feels somewhat whimsical. And I understand that it's kind of from the point it's more or less from the perspective of the girl, the Liesel is her name.
It was very Leave It to Beaver feeling to me.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't like Hitler? Oh, Liesel. Oh, you don't like... Oh, Liesel. You're a little communist.
And again, you given the subject matter, I mean, this is taking place during in Germany during the Holocaust, and it constantly just kind of throws me for a loop. I still like the movie. For me, though, I'm still left confused by what was trying to be said through the characterizations here. And I really feel that falls more on the director than anybody else, because yes, I know you're going off of a screenplay, but you can have that story be told and shown even when maybe the screenplay does or doesn't jive with the book in a certain way. So because of that, that kind of cost the movie a little bit more than perhaps it might have had the issue. Again, I just can't reconcile whimsy with Holocaust. I can't do it. I'm sorry. So for me, I went 3.5 stars on this one.
I mean, apparently the Germans were very whimsical.
I mean, I have heard about Hitler in Springtime, but...
Yeah.
I don't know if it gets any more whimsical than that. But anyway. What'd you think, sir?
It was beautiful to stare at. It was beautiful to have on in the background, I'd say, for moving pictures. The accents and the dialogue just stood out in a very cornball-y way. To me, it came across as like a voiceover work for an old, low-budget European movie. I don't know, especially that little blonde-headed German boy neighbor that she kind of has a little childhood crush on. Oh, Liesel. It's weird. His mouth would move and a different voice would come out than what I would expect. Yeah, so it's 1.5 for me. Like, I couldn't get engrossed into the movie. I mean, I love the story. It makes me want to go and read the book. But the one thing that I shouldn't take out of the movie was, like, oh, hey, Jeffrey Rush is a good actor. You know, that's pretty much it. So, 1.5.
All right, fair enough. Okay, so then last but not least is going to give us Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom. The 2013 British South American biographical film directed by Justin Chadwick from a script, basically from a screenplay by William Nicholson. And this is also based on Long Walk to Freedom by Nelson Mandela and stars Idris Elba and Naomi Harris. Now, this for me is yet... It's just the most recent rehash of Mandela's life. It's his story. I mean, it's a biographical story. You've seen it. Honestly, you've seen it once. You have seen it 100 times. The cinematography gets better every time you watch it because they keep updating the story. I mean, they keep, you know, new technological improvements make it look prettier. But it's still the same story. It bored me. It literally bored me. But again, I just feel like I'm just shitting all over everybody here. I'm not trying to... It's kind of like, hey, please don't take it personally, which is kind of hard when you say you don't like somebody's work.
But. Well, I mean, there's a reason why most of these movies, other than Before Midnight, were only nominated for sound Oscars, for either music or sound effects.
Sure, so. Yeah. I mean, that... Yeah, and again, you've seen it once, you've seen it all before. Honestly, even in terms of... What? This one was, like, what, sound design or something?
No, it's nominated for the song, the U2 song that randomly plays at the very end of the movie.
Oh, okay, sure. Ordinary Love. For me, I'm sorry, folks. This is definitely just a 1.5 star movie, and here's why. It's simply because there is absolutely nothing new. I didn't hate it. I just really didn't like it because I was bored from the get-go. There is just nothing new. If you've already seen one, you have seen them all. If you haven't seen one for any particular reason, check it out. 1.5 for me.
I thought Idris Elba gave a very commanding performance. But I think one of the reasons why Matt's saying that he doesn't see anything new is because this movie, it chronicles this man's legacy, you know, in 2 hours and 20 minutes. And it's just way too much legacy to fit in a 2 hour and 20 minute movie. So it just kind of skips along. It breezes through all these things. It breezes through where there could be some action and where it goes to where he's actually doing like the underground movements where he's being labeled as being a terrorist. It just kind of like, it's more of like a montage of events and nothing really juicy for the audience to really get into. And that really doesn't happen until closer to the end of the movie when he's older and getting out of prison and he's becoming the president, wanting to end apartheid and all that stuff. So my only solution, I gave this movie 2.5 out of 3 because it was a little bit engaging at times, but I think they should have gone the Steven Soderbergh route when he made Che, Part 1 and 2. Che's career in Cuba, you know, leading the uprising, taking care of business, and he split it up. He did the first half of it, which was like leading up to the revolts and the battles and all that stuff. And the second half was kind of the aftermath and the fall of Che. And I think this is what they should have done. It should have been Mandela Part 1, you know, the desolation of the apartheid or something. And it chronicles him starting off all the way up to him maybe just getting into prison. And then Part 2...
But to be fair, I think even to try and split this up, though, to be fair, again, the only real difference, because I don't want to try and contradict myself here, because it is the same thing that you've seen every time, is that this is based on his book. So it's in his words. It's not trying to say lied or anything, but it is strictly from his point of view. It's not necessarily how all of history played out according to the news or the history books or how other people might see it. This is just in his point of view. So I don't know that even splitting it into two movies necessarily would have done it any better, because, I mean, you're still just telling his story in his own words.
Yeah.
I don't know. So then, 2.5. Okay. Well, so he liked it a little more than me. See, he goes with it's okay. all right. Well, there you go. So then that takes care of the movies. Next week, we are going to be doing Man of Tai Chi, Queen of Versailles, and Scenic Route. All movies available on Netflix. For sure. You don't have to hunt and peck or go to the corners or try and hit the movie theater 16 times. We promise. We're back to the normal routine until next January when the Oscars come out again. Which leads us now to our Masterpiece Discussion with Matt and Tim. This week, we are going to be discussing our picks for the Oscar winners from the Oscar nominations of the 86th Annual Oscar Awards. All right, so there you go.
Yeah.
All right. You want to just run down the list here?
Sure. Yeah, we should probably start from the bottom and leave like all the juicy stuff last. Like, are you on the Oscar website?
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess we can probably start at the very bottom, like we're writing and.
Okay. Original screenplay. We've got American Hustle, Blue Jasmine, Dallas Buyers Club, Her, and Nebraska.
I am gonna go. Okay. Now, who do I want to win? I'm going to go with Her. Who do I think will win? Her. So I just, across the board, I'm going to say that Spike Jonze is going to get the Oscar for that movie. And reason being is because of just the characterization and creating these very personal characters. And it also helps that you can connect to Scarlett Johansson, who plays a computer. So,
who do I think is going to win on this one? Dallas Buyers Club. Who do I want to win on this one? American Hustle. I simply think that the writing is really, really, really good in Dallas Buyers Club.
Mm-hmm.
I think personally, on a personal level, that I just really love the creative writing that had to go into American Hustle to be able to pull off so many amazing characters being built. And that's why I would like for American Hustle to win. But I really think, given the equally strong characterizations pulled off by Jared Leto and Matthew McConaughey and the like, that I think Dallas Buyers Club will beat out Her. I certainly can understand where you're coming from, But I think in that particular regard, Spike Jonze has been trumped, regardless of his definitely original premise. let's see. Okay, so adapted screenplay. We have Before Midnight, Captain Phillips, Philomena, 12 Years a Slave, and The Wolf of Wall Street.
I think it's going to be between Before Midnight, Philomena, and 12 Years a Slave. To me, I honestly think this Academy Awards is the year of the mixed bag. Because who knows, really? Because like all these movies, where most of the big pictures that are nominated for stuff are such like so different from one another, and each one has a particular aspect to it that is vastly different from the other. And especially with writing, I don't see Captain Phillips winning. I can't see The Wolf of Wall Street. Personally, my favorite is Before Midnight. But I can see Before Midnight, Philomena, or 12 Years a Slave winning.
All right, but you got to pick one.
I'm just going to stick with my gut and say Before Midnight.
Okay, all right. For me, I would personally love it if Wolf of Wall Street won. I don't think it has a chance. Personally, I think it's between 12 Years a Slave and Captain Phillips. I think that the sheer amount of prodding and propaganda that went into Captain Phillips is going to pay off, probably has the best chance of paying off here. And so that's why I think it's going to be between Captain Phillips and 12 Years a Slave. Gun to my head, 12 Years a Slave, I think, is going to pull it out, though, on that one. Visual effects, though. We've got Gravity, Hobbit, Desolation of Smog, Iron Man 3, Lone Ranger, and Star Trek Into Darkness.
Well, I think this is pretty obvious. It's going to be Gravity.
Yeah, I totally agree here.
Yeah,
I don't see how that cannot win. Sound mixing. Captain Phillips, Gravity, Hobbit, Desolation of Smog, Inside Llewellyn Davis, and Lone Survivor.
Gravity again.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that one as well.
Because you also
given the depth of lack of sound.
Exactly.
In space.
Yeah.
I think it made it harder. Sound editing. We have All Is Lost, Captain Phillips, Gravity, Hobbit, Desolation of Smog, and Lone Survivor again.
I have Gravity again.
I disagree on this one. I think that it's going to be between Captain Phillips and All Is Lost. Although, to be fair, I would like to see Hobbit Desolation of Smog take this one. That'd be my pick.
But don't discount Lone Survivor. A lot of people, there are a lot of people speculating that Lone Survivor might actually pull out with this Oscar.
Well, even so, I think Captain Phillips on this one. I'm gonna go ahead and say Captain Phillips. This is kind of a tough choice between All Is Lost and Captain Phillips, but I really think I think Captain Phillips is gonna get it. Production design, American Hustle, Gravity, The Great Gatsby, Her, and 12 Years a Slave.
This is another toss-up for me, man. Either 12 Years a Slave or The Great Gatsby.
I'm with you here. I would like to see production design also go for American Hustle. But given that they have so many high profile chances to get stuff, I think this is where things like 12 Years a Slave, aside from Best Picture chance for 12 Years a Slave, I think this is where 12 Years a Slave is going to have the next best chance. But I personally would love for Great Gatsby to win. I'm going to go ahead and call it on Great Gatsby. I agree with you that 12 Years a Slave and Great Gatsby is kind of the toss-up here, but it still would be fun to think that American Hustle had a chance.
Well, you say Great Gatsby, I'll stick with 12 Years a Slave.
Okay, so then we've got music, original song. We have Happy from Despicable Me 2, Let It Go from Frozen, The Moon Song from Her, and Ordinary Love from Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom.
Okay, so Let It Go seems like the obvious one because that, I mean, they're promoting the hell out of that damn album, let alone that movie and let alone that song. Yes, the song stands out in the movie because as what Matt has talked about before, Idina Menzel has that voice that you know it's her when you hear it. It's crisp, it's clear, she can project, and regardless of what she sings, if she sings it well, it's phenomenal. However, Ordinary Love from U2 is just another U2 song to me. My vote goes towards The Moon Song from Her. It's sweet. It's not a complicated song, But it's one of those. It's kind of like why so many people love that song by Lorde. I forget what it's called, but so many people love it because there's not a whole lot to it. It's not a very complicated song. This song, the Moon Song, it's sweet. It's romantic. It's just a little strumming of the ukulele. And it just fit with the overall tone of the movie. So you can either look at, I mean, depending on how people look at choosing these songs, you can look at the one that stands out on its own, like, you know, this is a song that's catchy, that so many people enjoy, or you can look at a song where it just kind of blends in with the entire movie, and it takes, you know, you can take the song from the movie, listen to it, and you kind of get the gist of the atmosphere, you know, of the tone of the movie itself. So I go with the Moon Song from her.
I'm going to say my pick is Let It Go. I personally agree that it's going to be between Ordinary Love and Let It Go. I think those are the two big ones there. I also agree with Tim. Ordinary Love is just another U2 song. And for those who are in love with U2, I apologize for just another U2 song.
Yeah.
But
don't worry, they're going to come out with just another U2 song next year.
I'm sure. But my money's on Let It Go from Frozen. Let's see here. Music, original score, The Book Thief, which, of course, John Williams there. Gravity, Her, Philomena, and Saving Mr. Banks.
Gravity.
I agree. I think it's going to be between The Book Thief and Gravity. But yeah, I think Gravity's going to win this one out. Makeup and hairstyling, Dallas Buyers Club, Jackass Presents Bad Grandpa, and The Lone Ranger.
A lot of people are saying it's going to be Jackass Presents Bad Grandpa, which if they do win, it's going to be hilarious seeing that put across the screen, you know. And for the Makeup and Hairstyling Award, Oscar, Jackass Presents Bad Grandpa.
Well, I don't know. I think it's along the same lines for Lone Ranger, given that they have Old Tonto at the beginning. So I mean, you're doing pretty much the same work between Jackass Presents and Bad Grandpa. Me? My money's on Dallas Buyers Club. I think that they all deserve to be nominated. I'm not trying to take away anything because the makeup really is good, especially for Bad Grandpa. I was not expecting it to be that pristine. And then with Lone Ranger, I mean, such a large production really did have some really good hairstyling and makeup going on. But I think that the makeup and hairstyling has to portray the characters more than the movie.
Exactly.
And Dallas Buyers Club does it for me.
Yeah,
and my money's on Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, me too. Same with me. I say Dallas Buyers Club because I read an article where the makeup artist, she only had like $200 and something to do everybody's makeup. Like that was her makeup budget. So they had to play around with like oatmeal and just to create that look of whenever Jared Leto's character Aaron is dying. You know, that's like oatmeal they had to kind of like plaster on his face, give him that look. So it's, you know, very fascinating. And I think a lot of people take that into consideration when choosing these things. So
we have now foreign language film, The Broken Circle Breakdown, The Great Beauty, The Hunt, The Missing Picture, and Omar.
Now I'm going with the one that that to me is nostalgic Italian cinema, and that is The Great Beauty.
I am going with the one that I gave the best rating to, The Hunt. It was my favorite of the movies that we reviewed, and while I can certainly appreciate why you chose The Great Beauty, I really have to go with, for me, the one that I enjoyed the most because I find it to be in the category of like best picture. I mean, this is the best picture of the foreign language films that we're getting to take a look at. And so that's why I'm going with The Hunt. Let's see here. We've got film editing now. American Hustle, Captain Phillips, Dallas Buyers Club, Gravity, and 12 Years a Slave.
I say American Hustle because what I heard is that they created a completely different movie once they got into the editing room. Like the entire beginning when they're introducing the characters and they're doing the voiceovers, that was an afterthought. So the editor and the director had to create all that just with the footage. And I mean, the movie totally would have been different. It would have had a different tone and a different kind of feeling to it.
That's truly where the movie is made. The story that is told is made in the editing room. The production of the movie happens during the principal photography, but the actual story that gets told is the one that's done in editing. And I have to agree. I think this is one of those ones where they all have a relatively equal chance. Here, this is a pretty even split, but I'm going to go with American Hustle as well. I think it definitely has the best ability there to win. All right, so then documentary feature, The Act of Killing, Cutie and the Boxer, Dirty Wars, The Square, and 20 Feet from Stardom. Personally, I think this is going to be between The Act of Killing and 20 Feet from Stardom. I don't know which one of those two is going to be the winner. I would like to see The Act of Killing win.
Yeah, same here. It's provocative and super entertaining. You don't get those two in a movie that much anymore.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, all right, so here we go. We've got directing, American Hustle, David O. Russell, Gravity, Alfonso Cuarón, Nebraska, Alexander Payne, 12 Years a Slave, Steve McQueen, and The Wolf of Wall Street, Martin Scorsese. This is where it starts getting kind of dicey because it's all dependent upon who wins Best Picture. So where do you think it's
going
to go?
I think it's going to go with Gravity because I'm going off of last year. Ben Affleck won Best Picture for Argo, and Life of Pi got Best Directing last year. So I'm going with, because of the mindset he had to be in to have all this stuff ingrained in his mind because he wasn't able to see this stuff when they were filming it.
Right.
You know, that takes a lot of out of a director. You know, he has put so much thought into each shot that, out of all these movies, I think he had constantly had the most like creative mind to him. I'm sure there were other people involved too, but he deserves it because I think it was more so his movie.
While I agree with you, I don't think he's going to get it. Because there's too many other choices where they're not going to get Best Picture, but they have just as good a chance to get Best Director. I've got to say, I agree. I would love to see Gravity win it, but I really and truly think that it's going to be between 12 Years a Slave and American Hustle. And I'm going to go with 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind 12 Years a Slave either.
That's where I think it's going to go. All right, so costume design. American Hustle, The Grandmaster, The Great Gatsby, The Invisible Woman, or 12 Years a Slave?
I'm going with American Hustle because the costumes, some of them were just so damn ridiculous. It just fit the characters. It was like an extension of the characters, their costumes.
I agree with that, but I think costume design is more about the vision for the movie versus the characters that they portray.
Oh, yeah.
And it's on that merit that while I completely agree with you about American Hustle, that I think Great Gatsby is the one that's going to win on this one because of the design for the entire movie with the destitute side as well as the just ridiculous wealth, the conglomeration of all of that stuff, the visuals, just the way people looked and dressed and how they carried themselves, and it was all presented in such an eye candy format that's where I think the costume design is going to pull it out for Great Gatsby over American Hustle. But I do agree that American Hustle is awesome on that count. All right, so cinematography, The Grandmaster, Gravity, Inside Llewellyn Davis, Nebraska, and Prisoners.
I wrote down Gravity, but then it's like, you know, Inside Llewellyn Davis had a really cool look to it. Nebraska, we talked about that one last week, and it was just beautiful.
Absolutely.
And Prisoners, to me, one thing that I absolutely loved about the movie was that the atmosphere it created with the cinematography, and I really don't know with this one. I mean, I wrote down Gravity, but now that I think of it, it can really be any of those four.
Well, I would have to say that I see this year is going to be a three-pony race between Gravity, Inside Llewellyn Davis, and Nebraska. I think those are the front runners there. To be fair to Inside Llewellyn Davis, which I didn't enjoy all that much, I would have to say that it's really between Nebraska and Gravity. And I think that whereas Gravity does not pick up directing, I think because of the cinematography that leads people to, I think the smarter pick overall would be to give Alfonso the credit because he's the one with the vision. But I think the person who brings the vision to life directly is the cinematographer. And that's what everybody appreciates the most. And that's why I think cinematography is going to go to Gravity, not directing. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. Maybe I'm wrong on everything. But yeah, my pick here is Gravity. So now we're here at Animated Feature Film. The Croods, Despicable Me 2, Ernest and Celestine, Frozen, and The Wind Rises.
See, I haven't been able to watch The Wind Rises yet, and I don't think any of the others deserve it. God, if somebody held a gun to my head and said, Tim, pick one, I would have to go with the one that I enjoyed the most out of those, the four that I did see, and it was Ernest and Celestine.
I would say that it's going to be a toss-up between Wind Rises and Frozen.
Yeah.
Mainly because of the promotional side of Frozen. I got to say that this is a close call for me, and I'm just going to lean towards my love of Disney. I'm sorry. But this is like a 51-49 split, okay? This is not just like just lopsided all because I want Disney to win. Actress in a supporting role: Sally Hawkins, Blue Jasmine, Jennifer Lawrence, American Hustle, Lupita Nyong'o, 12 Years a Slave, Julia Roberts, August, Osage County, and June Squibb, Nebraska.
Oh, man.
This is a hard one.
Yeah. It's weird because the three that I'm going for, Jennifer Lawrence, Lupita Nyong'o, and June Squibb. Jennifer Lawrence is consistently great in every single one of her scenes, and she's in the movie a lot. Lupita has two scenes in particular where she's phenomenal in them and heartbreaking. June Squibb is funny. And she just adds so much to the movie. I know Jennifer Lawrence I don't know. I think it's honestly going to be a toss between Jennifer Lawrence and Lupita Nyong'o.
I'm in the same camp as you. Jennifer Lawrence, awesome, amazing. Lupita Nyong'o, and then June Squibb. But I really think that there was really only one true support role. So therefore, I think it's between June Squibb and Lupita Nyong'o. I would love to see June Squibb win, personally, but I think it's going to go to Lupita Nyong'o. So now we have actor in a supporting role. Barkhad Abdi for Captain Phillips, Bradley Cooper, American Hustle, Michael Fassbender, 12 Years a Slave, Jared Leto, Dallas Buyers Club, and Jonah Hill, The Wolf of Wall Street.
I'm torn between Barkhad and Jared because Barkhad is not a trained actor. He started off as like a limousine driver. I would love to see him do it, to see him get it because this is a character. He plays a person. You know, he's not just like a consistent asshole or mean person throughout the entire movie. He's a mean guy, but there's, you know, human nature plays a role with his. With his conscious, you know, throughout the movie, you know, there's more to him than just a hijacker. But Jared Leto, you know, he brings sweetness to this character, and it's hard not to love the character because, I mean, for one thing, this character gets shat on by everyone, by most of the people in the movie. His father, Matthew McConaughey, but they add so much light to the characters and what the character what all these people are fighting against, in the hope that the people are fighting for. So it's, I'm really just torn between those two. Who do I see getting it? Jared Leto, because of the name. Who do I want to see it? Both of them. I seriously just want there to be a tie.
Okay, here's my concern with Barkhad Abdi. I think he did a fantastic job, and I really don't want to take anything away from his skill that he portrayed in this movie. I believe, however, that it's too much too soon, and I'm worried that we will have another Gaboray Sidibe on our hands by letting him have it, or giving it to him, or however, awarding it to him. There. For me, and so that's why I'm glad he was nominated. I'm very happy that he was nominated. It's a high honor for him to have been nominated. So, I mean, you know, first time out the gate. What a great success story as well. And he deserves the accolades that he's getting for his role. But I really think that winning would just be too much too soon. For me, I think it's between Bradley Cooper and Jared Leto. Now, this is the one where I would have to agree with you. I would like for both of them to win. Now, I think that unfortunately we cannot have both of them win. So, gun to my head, Jared Leto. Would not surprise me if Bradley Cooper gets it. But, Jared Leto, I think, is going to win it. glad to see Jonah Hill there. Totally not surprised to see Michael Fassbender on this one.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, again, also glad for Barkat Abdi.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about it's a mixed bag. These nominations right here, totally different from one another. It's insane. It's crazy. It's difficult. I wouldn't be surprised if we got none of them correct.
Awesome. All right, well, let's see here. So, moving on, we have actress in a leading role. Amy Adams, American Hustle, Kate Blanchett, Blue Jasmine, Sandra Bullock, Gravity, Meryl Streep, August Osage County, and Judi Dench, Philomena. I'm going to say that Tim's going to say Meryl Streep.
Kate Blanchett.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, I'm surprised. I would have thought, good thing I didn't bet money on that. I would have thought that you would have gone with Meryl Streep in a heartbeat. Because you didn't like Blue Jasmine as much.
I didn't.
I know you didn't like trash it or anything, but I mean, you didn't like Blue Jasmine as much, and then you really liked August Osage County, so I'm surprised.
But I really like Kate Blanchett a lot. To me, that's what drove the movie, was her character. And just like what we were talking about, one of the greatest things about her character is that she really makes it hard to like her. I don't know, but you do like her, and you realize that certain things aren't her fault. There's just more to it. And then, like, how the ending of it, and it just worked for me. I would love to see Judi Dench get it. I think with Meryl Streep, it's like, if anybody comes maybe within, like, 5 votes from her, just go ahead and give it to that person that's, like, five votes behind her, at least. More than 5, Meryl Streep can have it. But if it's at least 5, give it to the next person. So I think it should just be passed down to Kate Blanchett.
Fair enough. All right. Well, I am very glad to see all of these characters here. Everybody who is in this one, I don't think anybody got shafted or anything this year. This is just such a tough year to pick. I'm going to have to go with Kate Blanchett as well. So I think we're in agreement there. All right. Actor in a leading role, Christian Bale, American Hustle, Bruce Dern, Nebraska, Leonardo DiCaprio, The Wolf of Wall Street, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and Matthew for 12 Years a Slave, and then Matthew McConaughey, Dallas Buyers Club.
Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, everybody here, I'm very glad to see got nominated. As much as I didn't care for 12 Years a Slave, I'm still, I'm not taking anything away from any of the nominations that it's gotten thus far. God, it'd be so nice to see Leo finally win. It's kind of sad. I think at the end of the day, this is going to be up between Chiwetel, and Matthew McConaughey. But unfortunately, I think Chiwetel Ejiofor is going to take it away from Matthew McConaughey. Just barely. Which then brings us to Best Picture. That's where I'm... For me, again, I really think it's Dallas Buyers Club, 12 Years a Slave, you know, an American Hustle. The true leaning here is going to be between Dallas Buyers Club and American Hustle. Gun to my head, American Hustle. Literally, I think it just razor's edge, and I think that's where it's going to land.
I think it's going to be 12 Years a Slave, because as far as historical dramas go, to me at least, it was the better of any of them that I think have come out recently, especially. And to me, I felt, from all aspects, completely a rock-solid movie. I had no issues with it whatsoever. Not saying I didn't have issues with American Hustle, or I didn't have issues with Dallas Buyers Club that are, you know, horrible or anything like that. But I don't know. There's just something in me that's saying 12 years.
I think, though, if you're correct, I think that if 12 Years a Slave wins, Matthew McConaughey gets it for Dallas Buyers Club. I think you'll see that happen. I think you'll be able to tell which one's going to pull it off, because I don't see, again, any of these movies sweeping. So you're going to start seeing it break down. So if 12 Years a Slave gets Best Actor, I don't think you're going to see it get Best Picture. If Matthew McConaughey picks it up for Dallas Buyers Club, then I think you're right. 12 Years a Slave is going to have. Otherwise, I think that it's going to eventually fall to American Hustle. And they're going to start dividing up the rest of the Oscars among the other winners. There are so many good movies up for Best Picture that nothing's going to sweep. But man, this is a rough one this year. It's a lot of good content, a lot of good actors,
yeah,
and actresses.
It's a toss up
and
mixed bag.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that pretty much is going to do it. Next week we're going to do a special 3 Squared of our favorite Harold Ramis films, and it's if he acted in them, great. If he directed them, great. If he wrote them, great. were just what, you know, our favorite Harold Ramis films. And I think we're up to the spiel now. Is that not correct?
That is correct, Matt.
Spiel on.
All right, well then let's do it, folks. The music you've been listening to, as always, has been brought to us by our music partners, Cries of Solace. You can check them out at criesofsolace.com, reverbnation.com, myspace.com, or facebook.com/criesofsolace. As for us, of course, we are still the SLS Cast, and you can go to our website, slscast.com. You can check us out on Facebook and search the SLS Cast. You can follow us on Twitter, at the SLS Cast. You can send us an email to theslscast@gmail.com. And, of course, subscribe to us on iTunes and favorite us on Stitcher. And until next time, this is Matt saying that thanks to Alec Baldwin, I get to say this. Shia LaBeouf went to a film screening recently and he wore a bag over his head and the bag says, "I am not famous anymore." And there was truly a part of me that felt sorry for him, oddly enough.
Take care, guys. See you next week.
Thanks again for listening to the SLS Cast with your hosts, Matt and Tim. Remember that you can find us at slscast.com, at the SLS Cast for Twitter, also on Facebook, and you can always subscribe on iTunes. Thanks again for listening.